are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
What you need when what you really want inside can you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all? Yeah.
I've never meant to kiss about you.
Ain't giving up a second thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at Time for an Awakening.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotel family, I hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day. It is Wednesday. Got to get over the hump. So I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, need do, should do, must do, can do, will do, and I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, I know you'll get it done anyway. Right on. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com. When it gets to that page, look for other programming, click on that, and there you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and that'll open up to previously recorded programs that are dated, entitled to thanks to my good brother and friend, Brother Kwaku. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program is every Monday and Wednesday and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other programming, right after my program on Mondays and Wednesdays, and that's today, is the Black People Matrix. The Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. From 1 to 3. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia from 6 to 8. Right after Acres of Diamonds, from 8 to 9, is Let's Buy Black 365. And right after Acres of Diamonds, Conversation, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. Black Reality Think Tank on Tuesdays with Dr. William Rogers. Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, today, this evening, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. Relationships with Joy and Troy. Then if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, brothers and sisters, you know what time it is. That's right. It is time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays from 8 until. Saturday Sports Talk. Saturday Sports Talk with your host, Troy Wilmore, from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Nah, that's right. It ain't me. It is Sister POC. Her program, once again, is Revive. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Sunday evening, 7 p.m. And then every Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern, it's the Warm Valentine Show here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. I was at the Greenbrier Mall yesterday. We Buy Black is always getting some more stuff put in on that kiosk, which is, of course, right next to the Medu bookstore. So We Buy Black Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. But as I said, if you are in the Atlanta area and you can go to the Greenbrier Mall right off of Georgia Highway 166, very simple, very easy. Bam, it's right there. And, you know, because it's Campbellton Road, Greenbrier. And you can go into the mall, and there it is, We Buy Black, with all kinds of good products, the laundry detergent. What else did I see? I saw so many things. Oh, they have a nice towel set. And once again, everything is produced by us. So check it out. Go online to WeBuyBlack.com. African for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tahimba. AfricanForTheAfricans.org. Go online to Africa, spelled with a C, for the Africans, spelled with a C, .org, and check out what Brother Bomani Tahimba has in store. In fact, he has a trip coming up in November 22nd to December 2nd, going to South Africa, Johannesburg and Cape Town. And then in the latter part of December, December 24th to January 4th, 2020, he's going to Ghana once again. And if you want to see pictures of previous tours that when he just had back in May, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see YouTube videos, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. You can see videos of previous tours. Shrine of the Black Madonna, located here in the West End and here in Atlanta. The number to call to the Shrine of the Black Madonna is 404-549-8676. The hours are Wednesday through Saturday from 12 to 7, and then on Sunday from 1 to 3. And they have everything you need. They got furniture, lamps, artwork, figurines, you name it. They got books. It's a bookstore. It's a cultural center and bookstore. So if you're looking for a book, they don't have it. Brothers and sisters, believe me, they'll get it for you. They also have the red, black, and green shoes, the Nagash shoes. They also have an African Holocaust Museum in the Shrine of the Black Madonna. And every Saturday, they have a class, a American African history class or an African history class. They have an African history class, Know Thyself. And it's free and open to the public every Saturday from 1:30 to 3:30. My good Baba Olatunji is throwing it down. But if you can't make it, but you would like that information, you can always go to the Shrine and purchase the Multimedia Library. Brothers and sisters, it is the most extensive cultural library of its kind. It has over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books. Brothers and sisters, it is 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment at your fingertips, and you can get it from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. The bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, which I mentioned, is right across from the kiosk of We Buy Black, is the Medu Bookstore. The sister is beautiful. She has been there for many years at the Medu Bookstore. Please give her a call at 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. She has books, cards, T-shirts, figurines, all kind of good stuff. And she's open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 and Sunday from 12 to 6. The Medu Bookstore. Another bookstore is Black Dot. Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. Brothers and sisters, there truly is light in the Black Dot. There truly is light in the Black Dot. And I'm going to read this, that what my brother, good brother, sent me. Brother Jamu. I wasn't prepared. See, I got to be better prepared. You know what I'm saying? You got to be better prepared. Get your stuff together, Brother Oshi. This is a free event. This is a cultural arts festival Saturday, September 28th at the Black Dot Cultural Center. They're going to have a block party. It's going to be all kinds of good stuff. Immerse yourself in many of the forms of art and culture in Lithonia from 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Main Street in Lithonia. The Cultural Arts Festival
sponsored by the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, Brother Gazimde Ajamu. I'll be promoting that, getting him on the line to talk about it very soon. September 28th is the Black Dot Cultural Center. So, where am I at now? Where am I at? Ah, I know where I is. Ulu. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. The Thursday night broadcast tomorrow night. The Ulu Thursday night broadcast. Brothers and sisters, please give a listen. But more importantly, go online. Usliftingus.com. Become a member. Read about what we're doing and how important it is. Brothers and sisters, this is truly in the spirit of Marcus Mosiah Garvey. When he talked about programs for our people, he talked about them collectively. They were cooperatives. They weren't one individual, a few individuals who were going to get rich. It ain't talking about who wants to be a millionaire. It wasn't that. It was sharing amongst our people the concept that is deeply rooted in Africa, an African concept, doing the most good for the most amount of people, doing the most good for the most amount of people. Us Lifting Us. Give a call tomorrow night at 9 p.m. at 9 p.m. 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789, the Us Lifting Us Thursday night broadcast. We pulled our money together in this cooperative and we established Cafe Ulu, located here in Atlanta, 2036 Sylvan Road. Once again, right off of Georgia Highway 166 and Interstate I-75-85. Very easy to get. You get off, bam, it's right there, Sylvan Road. And it's open Tuesday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And we have coffee. We have African coffee. In fact, we had, in honor of Marcus Mosiah Garvey, we had the Jamaican Green Mountain coffee. That was very good. Wasn't good as Cameroon Boyle to me. You know, sometimes you acquire a taste for your particular brand, and that's what it is to me. I like Cameroon Boyle. And so does my daughter. We both drink it black. I like my coffee like I like my women. Bitter. Cameroon Boyle, Tanzanian, Kenyan, Ethiopia, where coffee started. We have coffee. We also have had coffees from other parts of Africa and around the world. We also have loose teas. And everything, brothers and sisters, at Cafe Ulu is produced by us. Everything. Another drink we have at Cafe Ulu, a delicious vitality drink, Ambrosia, created by Brother Novak Young. Ambrosia. It has alkaline water, ginger, turmeric, organic cane sugar, and chlorophyll, as well as hibiscus, cinnamon, aloe vera, cayenne, and spirulina. There's five different varieties. There's the original, which is known as sorrel, made with red hibiscus flowers. And then there's the bite, just like the original, but extra ginger in it. Then there's cinnamon, the sorrel brewed with cinnamon for a spicier taste. Then there's the gold, made with yellow hibiscus flowers, aloe vera, and cayenne. And then there's the green, the same formula, but combined with the superfood spirulina. Brothers and sisters, go to Cafe Ulu and check it out for yourself. Akabin Institute, P.O. Box, send your check or money order to Akabin Institute, make out the check to Akabin Institute, send it to P.O. Box, 10786, P.O. Box, 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. If you want to use PayPal or Cash App, the $ YAAMBARU. Baruti. The third annual African Warriors Men's Day celebration will be Tuesday, September 10th. Manhood, warriorhood, and character. It'll be at the Akabin Institute, and it's a brothers only. I believe they're having a sisters only. I'm not sure if it's the same day or whatever. I'll find that out. Sister Gabrielle Averill with the SanjayHaiti.org. Brothers and sisters, please go online. Look at the beautiful work this sister is doing for the brothers and sisters in the northeastern portion, in the rural area of Haiti. SanjayHaiti.org, SanjayHaiti.org. And make a contribution, become a donor, become a sponsor, do whatever you can do. It's always good. Black Talk Radio Project, Brother Scotty Reed with the Black Talk Radio Network has now made that the number one American African podcast in the nation. One could argue in the world. But we want to be stronger, so we need your assistance. So please go to blacktalkradionetwork.com. And when you go on the website, you don't even have to go nowhere else. Right there, just scroll down, look to your right, and the donor button is right there. Click on that and make a contribution. $5, $10, $20, $50, $100, whatever it is that you feel on your heart to help maintain Black Talk Radio Network. The Black Talk Radio Project 2019 Media Fund. That's what it's called. The Black Talk Radio Project 2019 Media Fund. Help my good brother. Help. You ain't just helping him. You helping me too. Because I'm on Black Talk Radio Network, you know? So help us all. Yep. Yes, that's right. It's that time, brothers and sisters. The Yenye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Yenye Sesem. August 20th. If one examines the earliest history of a culture, although the brothers using race is the irritated genie. And once again, when people say that there is power in words, and I've heard that many times, and yet people use the same words that causes us to give it, it causes us to get a visualization of something that is not good. There is no such thing as a race. There's only one race, the human race, of which African people are fathers and mothers of. The main thing to be discussed is culture. So if you can use your mind that when you see the word race, put culture, and it'll give you a different perspective. So if one examines the early history of culture, one can draw insightful parallels between how they develop and how they currently function in society. Europeans imposed their culture on others, imposed their culture on the world. I'll read it again. August 20th. If one examines the earliest history of culture, one can draw insightful parallels between how they developed and how they currently function in society, the irritated genie. Homosexuality has its origin in the forsaken, glacier-bound, inhospitable communities where Europeans evolved for many hundreds of generations. It developed as an aggressive reaction to the territorial demands of a psychologically exaggerated hierarchical mind in the midst of extreme scarcity. It originated because of the need to establish an understood human order within a society where all interpersonal disputes were resolved violently in favor of those most physically powerful. What is the worst thing you can do to a people who you need in your gang without disturbing their physical capabilities? For hunting was a pack activity for those cave dwellers. To firmly psychologically establish a hierarchy based on raw, aggressive brawn. How can you openly demonstrate unquestionable dominance in close quarters? The answer? wanton homosexual rape. In European males' mind, the penis is a most lethal weapon. With it, he beats his woman, children, and other men into submission. He uses it like a cattle prod, as a painful threat of any instrument of control. Such behavior fits a sadistic psyche of control, intimidation, manipulation, domination of others through the administration of pain. It is his greatest weapon because violating another person's most personal space is to absolutely control him or her. It is his greatest weapon because violating another person's most personal space is to absolutely control him or her. Affirm, I see that historical patterns of insanity have been redefined as sane. Affirm, I see that historical patterns of insanity have been redefined as sane. August 21st. In times of danger, the man is the first to rise up to confront whatever the perceived danger or threat is. Anthony Duncor. This is not traditional African society. And because it is not, many of our sisters have been forced in an inevitable position of having to rear our children without their fathers, leaving them increasingly exposed to the manipulation and violence of racist institutions and predatory males. This situation calls for strategies which evolve compensatory roles by conscious brothers. In particular, it calls for brothers to become even more stronger examples of manhood throughout the community. It demands that we aggressively embrace the duties of being husbands to sisters without spouses and fathers to their children without assuming that this responsibility comes with a right to sexual access. Accepting this responsibility requires the commitment of strong men who honor the sanctity of African family and do not see this opportunity to do good as a chance to exploit the members of our community. Say, affirm, I take responsibility for ensuring the sanctity of African families. Affirm, I take the responsibility for ensuring the sanctity of African families. Since I won't be here on Friday, I'll be out of town. I will read. I'm going to come back and I'm going to read this one tomorrow's. But when I get back, I'll read the others. Like I said, I mean, the Enye Sesim, some of these quotes and then Baba Baruti's response, his narratives are just outstanding. Outstanding. August 22nd. The only time an action is revolutionary is when the people relate it to and in a revolutionary way. Huey P. Newton. Everyone claiming to be African is not African at heart. Every ideology espoused by those claiming to fight for African liberation is not, in the end, designed to empower African people. In fact, some of these proponents are anti-African as Urugu and their culture and society. Those of us who know who and what the enemy is and know that you cannot be wholly African within European culture and society, recognize that deep-seated, convincingly intellectualized confusion of the pretenders. In their hearts, these individuals many claiming to be new Africans, imitatingly and defensively harbor old European ways as they do Negroes they decry in order to magically become racial. Magically become radical. They are not independent nation builders. They have not rejected Europeans in their calls for Pan-Africanism. Some even revive a copycat European named Marx has the genius of their methodology, promoting class over race, has the class over culture, has they bed whatever liberal who will validate their human worth. They have no problem with European insanities as long as they are allowed to equally participate. They present the image of themselves as seasoned revolutionaries, yet champion feminism, gender confusion, colorlessness, capitalist socialism, and interracialism. They are neither revolutionaries nor new Africans. Given the democratic lie of Western society, they fit the description of what might be labeled new Europeans. Affirm, I respond to revolutionary acts in a revolutionary way. Affirm, I respond to revolutionary acts in a revolutionary way. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Yeah. I believe strongly and sincerely that with deep-rooted wisdom and dignity, the innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture united under one federal government will emerge not as just another world bloc to flaunt its wealth and strength, but as a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on fear, envy, and suspicion, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on hope, trust, friendship, and directed to the good of all mankind. Kwame Nkrumah, The Freedom Speech in 1961. If we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling amongst ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we suffered heretofore. I read those two, and I will continue to, because that is what's happened. That is where we are. It is unfortunate, but it is the truth. And as a brother who is a staunch Pan-Africanist, who understands and tries my best to understand the dynamics that we're operating under, I feel compelled to do all that I can every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And not just in that time frame, but in my life. In my life. I was explaining this past Garvey Day, this past Saturday, about, you know, the clothes I wear, the symbolism, the red, black, and green, the hat, make Africa home again. All of these things to me are so important. They're so important. That Africa pin that I wear, that I've been wearing since 1985, is dear. It is close to me. Since 1985, brothers and sisters, I'm just as committed and dedicated to the liberation, to the independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty of Africa and for African people. And it will be that way to the day I expire. I was told that yesterday, August 20th, was possibly the day that the first Africans landed on the shores of the United States of America, the United Snakes of America. It was the day in Point Comfort, later to be called Hampton, Jamestown. I know they're doing a Jamestown to Jamestown. And to me, some of this stuff is just symbolism without substance. many of the Africans going back. I've seen, what's his name? Steve Harvey. He's over in Ghana at the dungeons crying, you know, and maybe he might have a conversion. Maybe so. And that would be nice for him. He needs a conversion. Slavery ain't done nothing. Yeah, right. When he said that and all some other stuff that he done said. But, you know, I believe in redemption. Everybody. I mean, hell, I wasn't the Pan-Africanist that I am now. You grow into it. You learn. You experience. You read. You connect. You involve yourself. You know? And it's not easy. But 400 years, 1619, 2019, supposedly yesterday was the day. Now, understand, and let's give a little history lesson. I'm going to give a little history lesson. A couple of things I'm going to do. And then I'm going to further talk about what's going on. So this is a sister who talks about, I don't know who puts this, PBS. Okay. And the sister, she talks about, why did Europeans enslave Africans? Why did they capture Africans? So we're going to try to, and please forgive me, I'm going to try my best. I'm going to try my best to make sure that we can hear what I'm playing, because it's going to be on the computer. I wish I could have done better, but hey, it is what it is, and we're going to do the best that we can. Ain't that right? You know it.
Why were most slaves in the New World Africans, especially considering West Africa is thousands of miles away from the Americas and Europe? Slavery has existed in multiple forms throughout history and across a wide variety of cultures. But slavery in the early Americas, meaning the North American colonies, Central America, South America, and the Caribbean, was ultimately powered by the labor of enslaved Africans and their descendants. And there's an important question many people don't stop to ask. Why Africans? There was nothing inherent to the social or psychological makeup of West Africans and their descendants in the 17th through 19th centuries that made them more prone to enslavement. So, to get to the heart of our question, we should first ask ourselves, why did Europeans set out to colonize the Americas to begin with? Okay, so before I dive into the answers to these questions, I think it's important to note that there is no such thing as benevolent slavery, since any system that's predicated on the exploitation and extraction of labor through violence and force cannot be considered fair. However, the purpose of this rough timeline is to sketch a comparison without creating hierarchical values of assessing harm inflicted on enslaved people. To set the scene of the early American colonies, European powers such as Spain, followed by Portugal, the Dutch, British, and French, ventured out in search of conquest and capital. Their early explorations of the Americas, starting in 1492 and continuing up until the 18th century, weren't driven by wanderlust and a desire for adventure, no matter what Disneyfied versions of colonization we learned in the movie Pocahontas. Instead, they were looking for one primary thing, wealth. And this could mean gold and silver, or it could mean land, farmland, and commercial crops. The driving incentive for exploration was to increase European power and to fatten the royal coffers. But initially, slavery was not the source of this wealth. The early Spanish colonists to Central and South America in the 16th century wrested control of silver and gold mines that had been controlled by Incan and Aztec empires. By forcing native groups to extract silver and gold from the mines they had already established, colonists were able to meet their desires for high profits with low labor costs, aka no labor costs, because they weren't exactly intent on paying anyone. And the colonists were brutal. By working native people to death, cutting off limbs if they didn't extract enough materials quickly, or threatening them with murder, the Spanish were able to increase their mining efforts in these regions and to meet their specific demand for increased wealth throughout the 16th century. And despite European expectations, in other regions like North America or the Caribbean, there weren't huge repositories of gold and silver to send back to Europe. But even though there was little precious metal to be found, the monarchies and the early colonists who arrived in these areas were equally intent on yielding high profits. So so they turned to crops that yielded high profits like sugar, tobacco, rice, and later cotton. In order to assure the highest profits, they began to look to slavery, since European laborers and indentured servants required payment or other forms of protection. So next we have to ask, when did colonists in the Americas turn to the African continent as a site for extracting slaves? The first enslaved Africans arrived in the North American colonies under control by the British, the areas that would later become part of the U.S., in 1619, when 20 were forcibly transported to Jamestown, Virginia by the Dutch. But the first enslaved Africans had arrived in the Caribbean and Latin America prior to that, starting as early as the first decade of the 16th century. Because, remember folks, the colonies established in the Americas, plural, cover South, North, and Central America, plus the Caribbean, and not just the present-day U.S. But the transportation of African people into slavery began before the colonization of the Americas. According to an article by Professor Dr. Hakim Adid, the Portuguese began enslaving Africans in the 15th century when they arrived on the African continent for the purposes of trade. Around that time, they were enslaved Africans among other enslaved and free populations in Portugal. So even though it wasn't the only or necessarily most widespread form of slavery at the time, this 15th century precedent would set the stage for later decisions surrounding slavery that were to come in during colonization in the Americas. But at that point in time, captivity wasn't extended exclusively to black people or people from the African continent, and was often the result of raids, warfare, or slave trading that included Islamic traders, West African groups, and Europeans, among others. Okay, so we've established the precedents leading up to the explosion of the West African slave trade. So our final question is, why did European colonists start to look exclusively at West Africans as a source of slave labor? And how did the emergence of chattel slavery in the Americas differ from pre-existing forms? Remember that the colonies were established to make money for royal families and wealthy colonists. And a small class of wealthy colonists who owned large plantations looked to increase their margins through not paying for the labor that generated their cash crops. So it wasn't that slavery was needed to develop the colonies, but rather that it was decided that this was the quickest way to enrich the people invested in getting rich. Black slaves continued to arrive in the Caribbean, North America, and South America through the 16th, 17th, and 18th century, and it wasn't until the 19th century that slavery began to be eradicated. However, by this point, there was a large slave population in the Americas, and the condition of slavery was considered legally hereditary, with children taking the status of their mothers in perpetuity. When Europeans arrived in the Americas, colonists found that the previously established system that relied on enslaving conquered enemies was not functioning for several key reasons. Namely, first, early attempts in the Americas to enslave Native Americans proved difficult because they had familiarity with the terrain of their own nations and land. As a result, the potential for escape or revolt was high. This made using a system of leading raids and then enslaving whoever lost the battle less achievable, since colonists had little to no idea how to survive in these new regions and often fell prey to diseases which Europeans had no immunity to, namely malaria. The subsequent rampant genocide of Native American people and the introduction of new diseases that decimated their population, namely smallpox from Europe, made widespread enslavement less possible. But by transporting people from West Africa to the Americas, European colonists wanted greater ability to control enslaved populations by making escape more challenging and reducing the risk of those who did flee blending into neighboring native nations. Although the fact that there continued to be slave revolts amongst enslaved Africans and their descendants proves that this calculation was often mistaken. Second, West Africa was often the source of forced and kidnapped laborers because of its proximity to seaports, which made contact between these three locations more possible. Also, laborers from West African countries were more familiar with the agricultural methods needed for mass cultivation of these kinds of crops in the New World. So, how does it all add up? Well, even though the slave trade brought an estimated 9 to 12 million people here from Africa as cargo, colonists eventually resorted to reproduction within the colonies as a method for sustaining slavery. This meant that slavery could be passed down as an inherited status from mother to child. And to justify this never-ending enslavement, we started to see the evolution of false race science and racialization used as a justification for why one group of people, specifically people of African descent, were the only ones who could be enslaved. But this shift erased the reality that prior to turning to West Africa as a labor source, slavery existed across racial lines and was dictated more by battles and military capture than by skin tone. The resulting idea we had about race evolved out of a desire by people engaging in the slave trade to find an after-the-fact justification for enslaving people from one specific region over others. This history of racialization is covered in our episode on the origins of race in the USA, so check that out if you want to learn more. So, what do you think? Got anything to add to this historical puzzle? Any other resources or thoughts to share? Drop them down below.
That's a piece from PBS. And it tries to explain the brutality of the European mind to go somewhere and just take people's stuff. You know, African culture has always been dominant, just like African genetics are dominant. And when Europeans came and sat at the feet of African people and learned, and they went back to Greece, and then Greece became strong, and because of internal instability in Kemet, other parts of Africa, the Greeks came in and took over Kemet. And to the victors goes the spoils, the Ptolemies, and of course the most famous person of the Ptolemies is Cleopatra the seventh. The empire, because I mean, you know, when Alexander the so-called great was expanding Macedonia or Greece, one thing became clear is that he understood that the ancient Kemetic culture was superior. And he, when he died, he didn't even want to go back to Greece. He wanted to be buried there. He wanted to be what we were. And so when he died, his generals, the Ptolemies, took over. So they were in Kemet for about 300 years. And then, of course, came the Romans. And Cleopatra wanted to maintain the culture as it was. And that's why she played Julius Caesar and she played Mark Antony. But then, of course, it came to an end with Julius Caesar's brother, Octavian, or who named himself Augustus Caesar. And then Rome became bigger. Well, they went into a decline. They suffered a medieval or dark age. And in 625, the spread of Islam came on. So for 700 years, from 700 to 1400, or thereabouts, Europe was in a dark age. And the only light in Europe was going on was with the Moors in Spain and Portugal. Then Martel and Charlemagne had the awakening and they beat back the Moors and got them out of Spain and Portugal and Sephardic Jews out of Spain and Portugal. And they reestablished themselves. I guess they had I can't say that they had a conference. I haven't seen that history where they all understood what they wanted to do there, where they had a conference to say, we may war amongst ourselves, but we're going to come together on those who are outside of us. Like they had a conference in Berlin in 1884-85 when they literally carved up Africa like a Christmas turkey, each claiming a piece for itself. Spain, Portugal, Belgium, France, England, Germany. So I can't speak to that. But what I do know is that this European rise, where they ventured out in their, quote, explorations and co-optations, when they ventured out, like Marco Polo goes to China, comes back with pasta. That's why people think spaghetti is Italian. Marco Polo was an Italian. But it's really Chinese. That's why people think that rice is Chinese, but it's really African. But he brought back gunpowder, which Chinese used for celebration. And they were able to develop superior weaponry. That's probably one of the main things that helped facilitate the rise of European dominance in the world. A better way. As I always say, they always find a better way to kill your ass. From throwing a rock at you, to clubs, to arrows, to spears, to catapults, to crossbows, all kinds of torture. In the medieval times, in those dark ages, you should see some of the torture mechanisms, you know, the pit and the pendulum. Man, sadistic. And because of that, and then, of course, ship making, which, of course, they got from the Moors, map making, they got from the Moors. So they nothing original. They're cultural bandits. They're always appropriating something. They're always stealing something, claiming it has their own. And so they went around the world and took everybody's stuff in the name of. And when they came to America, it was so bad that they were engaged in cannibalism in some areas, especially in the Northeast, because of the harsh conditions. And just like the piece said that I just played, no, they couldn't enslave. The people were already here on their own land. The people knew the terrain, and they were not going to have it. They were not going to be enslaved in their own land. And so understand something, brothers and sisters, because I hate when we say we sold our people and we did it. No, we did not. What do you think that we had, that there were some wars amongst our people, and we had them a corral, and we said, you know what, we ought to sell this group of people, this cultural group of people. Let's put a sign out. Anybody interested in some people who you can have work for you for nothing? Anybody interested? No, they didn't do that. They were in the market for it. Their whole plan was to take Africans initially out of Africa and go to the areas that they were conquering, go to the areas that they were taking, because the people already there were not going to have it. And that's what they did. Taking people's stuff is what they do. 400 years, we've been here. Some say yesterday was the day that signaled 400 years. So now what we going to do? What are we going to do? It has been further planted into our minds who we are and who we are not. I'm going to tell you what, I'll make a break here. We'll have a break when we come back from the break. Got more stuff, of course, that we're talking about today. And you can join this conversation. What do you think? What do you think after 400 years? What should be our end game? What should we do? Should we toil another 400 years begging and pleading, hoping and praying? What should we do? Give us a call and join this conversation at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. 400 years, now what? Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back with this very important conversation that we're going to have. 400 years, what should be our direction? What should we do? Now what? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come on, let's rock it. America. We are the chosen. A chemical seduction, the path to destruction. Chemical seduction leads to destruction. Come on. All the brothers and sisters from far and near, keep on have a message everybody's here. Stop killing one another with guns and dope, or we as people have lost our hope. If the killer has to take it, open dead and go. Let me tell you about a nigga better way to go. Don't cost one dime. Don't take no time. Now let's stick it. Let me get like so fine. If you feel it, child.
Tell you to
Oh, I didn't put that in there. My bad. I'm looking for our commercial from Scotty Reed. And, man, I didn't put that in there. My bad. Oh, well, I'll play it right now. How about that?
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You know, I'm waiting. Wait a minute. Oh, I didn't program it right. My bad. That was, of course, the last song was Kwame Cobb and his lovely wife, Chavin Duca, out of Chicago. They're the ones that put the principles, the seven principles, the Kwanzaa music that I play every year around Kwanzaa. Beautiful. And prior to that was We're a Winner, Sounds of Blackness. Excuse me. Africa to the Americas. We are the drum, the sounds of blackness. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays, my program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., followed by the Black People's Matrix from 1 to 3 on Mondays and Wednesdays with Brother Franklin Jones. Acres of Diamonds on Mondays from 6 to 8, followed by Let's Buy a Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. On Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister PLC. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And every Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern, it's the Warren Ballantyne program, the Warren Ballantyne Show. Monday through Friday at 10. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Also, too, because I'm not going to be here on Friday, I'll always announce my good brother, Brother Yusuf Muhammad, and his program, Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness is every Friday from 4 to 6, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. And the number to call is 563-999-3089. 563-999-3089. You know, this discussion that we're having on this issue is very serious, because we need, and that's something we don't do, we need to look at the 400 years. What has happened to us in 400 years of being in this situation? What is our situation? I mean, what is our life like collectively? I ain't talking about in 400 years and out of enslavement in 1865 or 1863, whatever year you want to use. And that there's a few of us who have done very well. A few of us who have done not so well. No, not a few, a lot. Because see, I don't measure the progress of African people by a few who imitate Europeans. I measure the progress of African people by how they are now thinking independently. How they are thinking in terms of self-determination. How they are liberated in their minds and seek sovereignty for our people. That's how I measure it. I don't measure it by the fact that we have some entertainers, whether it's athletics or whether it's acting or singing or dancing, performing. Maybe a business person here or there. That's how I measure it. This is Europeans. It is not African. It speaks to the European, not African. In fact, it denies African. It hates African. It wants to kill African. The first Africans tour in Virginia is a reckoning over our captivity, but it doesn't go far enough. This is last year, August of last year. A recent afternoon tour guide, Justin Bates, pointed to the spot where historic Jamestown legislature first convened in July of 1619. He then gestured toward another nearby spot where some of the first Africans, not slaves. See, I'm going to tell you, this is the Atlanta Black Star. It should be the Atlanta African Star. Get the word black. We're not black. We're not black. Hell, if you see me, yeah, in the parlance of the word, but I'm not black. I'm African. We're not black. Yes, I've seen some brothers and sisters on pictures and seen them who are dark, very melanated, deeply melanated. The blessing for them from a hot sun. Protection from a hot sun. But we're not black. We are African. They ain't white. They are not white. They are European, Caucasian. And if we really thought in those terms, the dynamic would be so much different. How we relate to ourselves, one another, and to those who are outside of us. Believe me. Freedom over there, Bates told visitors near the banks of Virginia's sprawling James River. Captivity. Freedom is over here and captivity is over there. Jamestown has long been associated with the legend of Pocahontas and more recently as a place where a harsh winter turned some of those colonizers into cannibals. But the historic site is now offering a regular tour that encourages visitors to consider the beginnings of the American captivity of African people. See, and that word has become deeply associated with us. And see, that's what I'm saying. You don't understand about words. If I say the word Holocaust, whose face and picture do you put on those words? European Jews. They have a word, which is Shoah. The word is an English word, but they've co-opted the word, and so anytime they want to use it, the Holocaust. Well, hell, our people have paid a tremendous cost. One hell of a cost. That's what I'm saying. Words. Change the vocabulary. Don't let the European... The words that the European uses the word, you don't use it. How about that? How about that? Jamestown has long been associated with the legend of Pocahontas. Poor Pocahontas. And most recently as a place where harsh winter turned colonists into cannibals. But the historic site is now offering a regular tour that encourages visitors to consider the beginnings of the American captivity of Africans. The first Africans tour is the first of its kind at the historic site, but it is part of a much larger reckoning over captivity, an institution that took root in England's first permanent colony 12 years after its founding. In January, Trump signed into law 400 years of American African History Commission Act. It requires a commission to develop programs that acknowledge the Africans' arrival in 1619 and the captives' impact. Trump. And I remember, where was I? I was at some place. Damn. Well, the sister said, oh, yeah. Yeah, my sister Izzy. Yeah, she said that the pact was signed because she's... and a legislative aide to Congresswoman Gwen Moore out of Wisconsin. Yeah. And she said that when Congress did it, it has really no teeth. There is no money. It's just another piece of paper that is worthless. It has no money to it. They were supposed to develop programs around this time to focus in on the impact of our captivity here. Meanwhile, Virginia launched its 2019 commemoration, American Evolution. It recognizes the first English-style legislature in North America, in Jamestown, and other historical milestones from four centuries ago, including the Africans' arrival. In 1619, Africans came on two ships, the White Lion and the Treasure, that had recently raided what was believed to have been a Spanish captive vessel in the Gulf of Mexico, sailing into the Chesapeake Bay to what is now Hampton, Virginia. The ships traded more than 30 Africans for food and supplies. English colonists took the Africans who came from what is now Angola to properties along the Jamestown River, including Jamestown. A visitor center and a monument are planned for the land. A visitor center and a monument are planned for the landing site in Hampton, known then as Point Comfort. Yeah, Point Comfort. The area is now part of Fort Monroe, a former U.S. military base owned by the National Park Service. It is a difficult story, said Terry Brown, the first American-African superintendent of Fort Monroe National Monument. But I want the nation to understand this is an American story. Recognition of the captive Africans' arrival also provides a counter-narrative to the claim of Caucasian nationalists that America's roots are Caucasian. Yeah, they are. It was not a Caucasian society with people of color as interlopers playing bit parts, said James Horn, president of the Jamestown Recovery Foundation, which oversees archaeological digs there. One ongoing excavation focuses on an African woman who was taken to Jamestown in 1619. She had been given the name Angela, likely by the Spanish because her arrival and lived in the house of Captain William Pierce, a wealthy merchant and planter. The structure no longer exists, but archaeologists with the National Park Service and Jamestown Recovery have uncovered its brick floor and located the kitchen area where Angela likely had worked. The first African tour includes excavation sites as well as a spot on the river where Angela likely first stepped off a boat into Jamestown. Think about what that must have felt like, Bates recently told a group of visitors. Scary, said one woman. Kim Hall, National Park Service Superintendent of Colonial National Parks Historical Park, which includes Jamestown, said tears have been shed at the excavation site. Some of these tears were her own. We hope to bring some empathy and connection and understanding about these stories of origin, she said. Some historians are weary of focusing too much on 1619. Davidson College professor Michael Grasso has written that the Africans' arrival in Virginia was just a blip on the radar screen in the larger context of captivity. More than 500,000 in captive Africans had already crossed the Atlantic to other European colonies, including places that later became parts of the United States. So before 1619, the Caribbean, Central America, South America had already had Africans who were captured before Africans set foot on what is now known as the USA. Gresco warned that too narrow of a focus on 1619 risked the implications that Africans entered an established Caucasian society. Jamestown inhabitants were living on death's door in America. The Jamestown inhabitants, they resorted to cannibalism. Virginia was still, Tecumseh, Europeans were the non-native species, and the English were the illegal aliens, he wrote in a September for African Perspectives. It says black. A blog for the American African Intellectual History Society. Those working at Jamestown had sought to address such concerns, emphasizing its shared cultural history. Bates, the tour guide, charts the history of European captive trade and the growth of the American captivity. He also details the evolution of colonial laws, many passed in Jamestown, that created a culture-based system of captivity. By that, they mean those who were Caucasian had the right that to rule over non-Caucasian. You get the picture. Jill Williams, an American African woman who recently visited the excavation site where her husband and son, she said, was unaware of Angela's story until she arrived in Jamestown. It's nice to go somewhere and know there's a story about our people. Everywhere, girl. It doesn't always happen, said Williams, and she's from Hempstead, New York. It's a tough history to grapple with, she said, of Africans who arrived in 1619. But they came here and survived. They took care of people. They raised people. Why did I choose that? I don't know. I don't know. But of course, the main person dealing with captivity of our people, of course, has been the British. And if you have ever heard me speak, you will know I have a deep disdain for the British. They purport themselves, they were the main captors of our people and enslavers of our people and transporting. I mean, even John Hawkins and his crew cut a deal with Spain to bring us over. In fact, do you know, have you seen, if you live in the hood and you go to the liquor store, you know there's some malt liquor. Now, if you go to the Caucasian store, and you may not find no malt liquor. But in our community, there is malt liquor. And the reason why malt liquor is heavier than regular beer is the introduction of sugar into the brewing process, which makes it sometimes almost a half more potent than regular beer. One of the beers that was very potent was Old English 800, brewed by Pabst Blue Ribbon. Old English 800. Now, if you get a chance to go to the liquor store and it's in the hood and they got some malt liquor in the cooler, see if you can find Old English 800. When you look at the bottle of the Old English 800 closely, you will see that there are crowns. A crown, you put on top of the king or the queen's head, a crown. And there's 32 crowns in the circle. And then in the O, for Old English, there's one more crown, 33 crowns. Well, the British cut a deal with the Spanish to pay for each captive that would land alive 33 crowns. Now, today, the currency, not the euro, the currency in England was the pound. The pound. But back then, it was the crown. The crown. I ain't gonna go too deeply off into that, but you get my point. Give me a call at 215-490-9832 to join this conversation. Because I know you got something to say out there, but if you just want to listen, that's fine too. Because you know I can go off on a tangent, go off on a rant. And so the British have a deep responsibility. Oh, well, we ended a captivity for, and understand something. They didn't bring a lot of captives into England. This was for the territories, the lands that they took, because they understood that the native indigenous people were not going to be put into that kind of servitude on, you know, you come into my home. Me and my people have been here for hundreds, if not thousands of years. You coming into my damn home and you making me work, stealing my wealth. I ain't having it. So they went and got these Africans. Many times they would raid villages. Now, of course, yes, they had some accomplice. They had some African accomplice, because maybe I'm from the Kikuyu tribe and that's the Igbo tribe. And so we, you know, I don't care about them. Oh, what a great service for us that we didn't understand that we're one African, no matter what cultural group. And I hate the word tribe. No matter what cultural group that we were, we're one African. If we'd have maintained that mentality, we would have kicked they ass. Brother Akila, I don't know if you know Brother Akila. Brother Akila, he is outstanding. Brother Akila, he is in the UK, a rapper in the UK, speaking many times on social. If you go online to YouTube, you will see him in a lot of conversations. We got a call, 602-602, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshie.
Brother Marcus, how are you today? How are you?
I'm doing great, good, brother.
Good. I'm having this conversation today because supposedly yesterday, August 20th, 1619, was the first African that landed here in the hells of North America on this on the property of the so-called United Snakes, 1619. August 20th, signaling 400 years of our people being here, 400 years of this mental, physical captivity. What do you say there, brother?
My brother, 400 years is long enough to know if there was any human relationship to be worked out with this European, we could have done it in 400 years. And the fact that we're still here haggling, you know, trying to figure out with these Europeans, meaning that these people have no intention of working any honorable relationship with us, you know.
That's
because
right.
Because we could have done it in 400 years.
Exactly. I agree wholeheartedly. Even after our physical captivity ended in
exactly
January 1st of 1863, but of course everybody didn't get the word. So in June 19th of 1865, so supposedly that's why some of us, that should not be a day of, there should be no day of any damn celebration as it relates to what Caucasians have did us. The only day of celebration is what we have done for ourselves to free ourselves of this mental and physical, emotional and spiritual captivity that we have been experiencing here. That's the celebration. But just to celebrate and then go back to business, damn it, as usual.
Destroy the mentality of our people, you know. I hear people talk about, some people, black people talk about, oh, the good old days. What? Good old days in America. There never been no damn good old days for black people here in America. It's been hell. You know what I'm saying? So we have to, everybody came and embrace the homeland and move forward, you know, to build their homeland.
That's
you know?
Right. That's
we
right.
are still here calling this place our homeland. No, this
it's
is
not.
The red man's home.
That's right. It's
and
not.
By us staying here, we are depriving the red man of his territorial integrity. And we turn our back on the richest piece of real estate in the world.
Ain't that deep?
We turn our back
yeah.
and
our legacy and trying to, you know, steal somebody. Because staying here with European, you're stealing the red man's legacy, you know. And it's every time the world looks up, who is it coming with a gun with the white man? Is this Negro, this sick Negro, you know? I hear Negroes saying, oh, you know, this morning they were on the radio talking, a terrestrial radio, and they were saying, oh, yes, you know, we should follow Trump. You know, Trump told us, what do we have to lose? So I asked the Negro, what do you have to gain? Okay, Negro, what do you have to gain, Negro? You know, you're sick. You are sick. You need to be medicated. And, you know, so... no solution for black people here.
None.
400 years is long enough to know. And we better embrace our motherland quick,
that's
fast,
right,
and in a hurry.
That's right.
You know?
So
you
we
know?
Can, so you we know? Can, because they toehold that the Chinese, the Indians, the Koreans, and every damn body else but us are establishing on the continent makes it a lot more difficult. But I maintain, if Africans on the continent, along with Africans in the diaspora, particularly the Africans here in America, would break that ignorance, would break that, would release that vice grip that Europeans have on our minds, then we could do great things.
Yeah. Nobody share their homeland with anybody. Only us. You know, when we go to Europe, when we go to China, when we go to India, they treat us worse than dogs.
That's right.
You know, but yet still we welcome everybody into our home. Oh, yes, come, welcome, you know. You know, but when we travel to their homeland, we get treated,
yes,
you know.
Yeah.
So this, we have to wake up. And I tell you, I say it again, it is this African in the West, is this one that was taken away from the mother. It is that one that's going to, it is us that have that spirit, that have that driving spirit. That's why they don't want us to connect with the motherland.
Yeah, right.
Because they know that anyhow we connect with it, it's finished. It's finished. But that is the solution for our people, because if
that's
we don't, if we lose Africa, we could forget it.
We will lose being African people. We will be decimated. We will be eliminated.
So we must, it is imperative that we join with our motherland.
You know,
good brother.
Oh, brother. Go ahead. Brother, thank you, Brother Marcus. Appreciate you very much, man. Thank you always for listening and contributing.
Yeah, good brother. All right.
You know, what Brother Marcus is saying in terms of, look at this country. Our numbers in this country were growing. When Europeans realized that they were not, and this is some time ago, okay? This is not something recent. This is some time ago. I remember Ben Wathenberg of the Decline of the West sounded their alarm so many years ago. Many have said that we Europeans, we're not, we're experiencing, you know, zero population growth. For everyone that lives, one dies. And so we're not progressing. Africans, of course, was very positive population growth because we had reached up to damn near 20% of the population. What are we today? 12. How in the hell can that happen? We have a younger population. You can see that because the Europeans, because of all, you know, genetically they have issues. But also, too, women were waiting to try to have children. Now, then they went beyond their biological clock time. And so they're not having kids. They were going through all kinds of things. Europeans are always trying to figure out how can we birth some kids. Artificial insemination, test tube babies, all of that stuff. They were declining. Not just in America, around the world. Europeans, period. On the continent of Europe. You've been on damn continent. In Europe, in Australia, wherever they're declining. But yet our population here in America, in the United States, is also experiencing zero population growth. So when they said that about 30-something years ago, The demographer said that if this does not change, then by the year 2050, Europeans would be a minority in the country that they are the majority. Well, you know, we can't have that. They can't have that. But the deep part is they no longer say 2050. They're saying 2035, 2040. Less than 20 years from now. Less than 20 years from now. I'll be whatever, 80 something. But I would love to see it. I may not. But what's important is not the fact that they're declining. The fact that our problem. I don't give a damn about Europeans' problem. I care about our problem. But Europeans' problem is always going to have an adverse effect on us. So they want to make sure that those years are maintained. Let me get this piece by Brother Keeley in on Britain, because you know I hate British. I hate them with a passion. I swear I do. And man, I tell you, the British hate them. Let me pull this up and listen to my brother here.
The UK has an interesting hit. They were actually tortured. They were bred like animals. Yeah, and so
absolutely.
Forth. But the UK was technically responsible for all this initially because, you know, before the US was independent, the UK was sending slaves into the US, into Jamaica, into Haiti,
Britain did. So what Britain had was in the 18th century, Britain got the contract for what's called the asiento. So this was the right to supply enslaved people to all of the Spanish colonies and then eventually the French. So Britain became the premier sort of slave trader. So even a lot of the enslaved people who were going to the French colonies or the Spanish colonies, it was British shipping that was carrying them and selling them. So you are actually correct in that sense.
So, I mean, but when you look at, you know, black-white relations in the UK compared to the US, are they similar or are they a little bit different?
I would say there's some similarities and then there's some huge differences. So, for example, there is nowhere in the UK you can go where there's only black folk. You know, like if you go to the south side of Chicago or you go to certain parts of the Bronx, I've visited family up there, and literally that everyone that you won't see. Like, in fact, my business partner grew up in Brooklyn before age 10. You know, I don't think she'd even seen any white people. Do you know what I mean? So there was Brooklyn back then, you know, a whole school. There wasn't a single non-black person in the school. You have places in the UK that are close to that, certainly with the schooling. But even then, you're probably talking like 70-30 if you went somewhere like Peckham or Moss Side in Manchester back in the day. Actually, it's much more racially integrated, even than, say, France. So one of the things France did was chose to take its immigrant community, which are predominantly West and North African, and put them outside of the city in these massive projects, housing projects, outside of the city. In the UK, we are all inside the city, and the projects are right in the centre, in and among the wealth. So you have the difficulty in the UK where, because there wasn't formal Jim Crow in the same way, there was segregation being practiced and the British government never did anything about it for a very long time, but they didn't enforce it. You had, because you don't have quite the same history, it can be a lot more difficult to deal with. But also there's no doubt that the experience of black folk in America, right to this day, is far worse. Many of us who came from the Caribbean, so if you're from Jamaica, when slavery ended in Jamaica, there was no KKK. Only a suicidal nut job of a white man would have started a KKK in Jamaica where they were like 1% of the population, right? So even though there was poverty in Jamaica and structural problems, when my grandparents came, they came from an environment in which the tiny white population that they had still in Jamaica had not continued to terrorize them in the intermediate century. Does that make sense? So they came with a certain idealism for the British Empire and a certain admiration, but they hadn't experienced a lot of what African-Americans experienced in that whole intervening century. We got some of it, but there were not public lynchings in the UK in the 50s and 60s. So I don't want to play it down and say it's not a huge problem. It is. But I also want to be respectful to, I mean, the police are not pulling drive-bys on 12-year-old children in the UK. There is police brutality. People are getting killed. But I think to make a kind of apples for apples comparison with the black American situation, because we can relate to it, would be a bit disrespectful and a bit of an exaggeration. The situation here, to me, is much more extreme in both ways, in terms of the oppression is much worse. The hoods out here are much worse. In fact, America's by far the most violent of all the developed rich countries in the world. But in a weird way, black culture, because of that, has a lot more respect there's a lot more opportunities in some ways than there is in the UK. In fact, even many successful black people from the UK end up coming here. You think of someone famously like Idris Elba or Chiwetel Udefo or any of those kind of actors. Partly it's just because Hollywood's here, but partly it's because they probably wouldn't get the kind of roles that they can get here. So it's a weird contradiction to me. There's no black middle class in the UK. Whereas I've been to neighbourhoods in LA or elsewhere. It's a middle, like, it's strange for us. Like, it's a middle class neighborhood.
There's no middle class in the UK.
So there is
black
there
middle
is,
class in the UK.
No, there's in black individuals that are middle class, but there's no black middle class neighborhoods. So if you came to the UK and you said, "Where's the black neighborhoods?" All of the neighborhoods I could point you to are hoods. They're working class neighborhoods. So yeah, there's individual black people who are doing. I'm doing okay. I can hardly say I grew up. I earn far more money than either of my parents did growing up, for example. So I can hardly say my children will grow up the same way I did, but there's no neighborhood to migrate to. If that does that make sense?
There's no Harlem, for example.
There's no right. You know, right in Harlem, you had that division of the poor part, but then you had the Harlem Renaissance. You had all of. There isn't that. And so, in a weird way, America's kind of idealized by a lot of people as the land of opportunity, and that can kind of obscure just how difficult it is to quote unquote get out of the hood here. But then the extremity is much worse for those that know it. So the UK. The extremes are not as broad, if that makes sense, if I can make that crucial
sure.
comparison.
What do you think about the whole situation?
Brother Keela, speaking on the situation in the UK. Sorry about that. I got to move the mic to do that particular piece. And the reality is that it doesn't make any difference where we are. Bobby Wright said it, wherever they are and we are, they're in a position of dominance and control, and we are in a subservient position. It defies all laws of probability. And of course, you know, Bobby Wright died in 81. And that's still that way and still true today. Signs showing you may suffer from this mental captivity that we're in. Dr. Amos Wilson said there's 5 signs that show you may suffer from mental captivity. Number 1, what language do you speak? Language is critical to the expression of culture. It is a means by which the values, beliefs, and the customs of a people are communicated. When African people were forced to adopt Euro language, European languages, we were forced to abandon our own worldview and accept a foreign, the Europeans' worldview. We use their language. That's what I'm saying. Language, words are important. I used to do a piece with the children I used to work with in Milwaukee. I used to say, close your eyes. I'm going to say some words, and I want you to be honest of whose face do you put on those words. So now close your eyes. Welfare. Drug addict. Drug dealer. No fit father. No fit mother. Gangster. I could go on, but you get the point. You get the point. And to be honest, just like I said, the word Holocaust, whose face did you put on that? Be honest. You're conditioned. Your mind, you are conditioned. What name do you answer to? We were stripped of our names from our homeland. This loss destroyed the link that tied our people of African descent to their heritage and their history. Some Africans have shared European names, like me, but most still answer to names that designate us as property. As property. I reject. See, my contention is this, brothers and sisters. We must come to a point where those of us who are strong enough, not the so-called intelligentsia, not those who are in the halls of academia, not those who are in theology or in the church, not any of that. Those who understand to be outside, to be able to step outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon us, to call it what it is and to reject whatever Europeans present. To reject it. What kind of food do you eat? Captive Africans lived their day-to-day lives in a desperation and hunger. Comfort was sought in what became known as soul food. While a Caucasian ate the best parts of the meat, Africans were relegated to eating all the other parts, the feet, the ears, the tail, the skin, and the intestines. And today, American African people still partake of this type of comfort food, even though it is proven to be unhealthy. You know, and I understand when we get together and we share food and there's ribs, there's ham, there's, you know, pork loin. You know, I think that once we begin to really understand where our diet is, what it does to us, the obesity in our community, the hypertension, the diabetes, and all of the things that I could go on. Number four, what God do you pray to? Captive African people were forced to abandon their spiritual belief system and to adopt the European version of Christianity. And if there is an African version of Christianity that is real, some talk about Ethiopia and so forth. I'm saying for us, the theology that we have, this is for us in terms of our liberation. You know, what we have to understand is not about the theologies that we want to subscribe to or lay allegiance to. In fact, we must put them in the back pocket, put them in the closet, leave them at home. Because when we come here to deal, just like Malcolm said, Islam is my theology. It's my philosophical theology, Islam. But I know if I come to the table in the discussion, what's going to happen with African people, and I'm talking about Islam, I'm going to have problems. It's the same thing with the preacher talking about Christianity or somebody talking about Black Hebrew Israelites or any other damn thing. I'm saying that theology should be just between you and your God. Not to proselytize, not to impose it on anybody else. It is a problem. It's probably one of the main, as far as I'm concerned, one of the main problems from us not being unified. Especially in America. But hell, on the continent too. It's ridiculous. It's even more ridiculous on the continent because of the ignorance that the brothers and sisters have displayed because they've been duped for so long. Anytime that you can bring a Caucasian who looks like the representation of the paintings of the Renaissance folks of who they think Jesus the Christ is supposed to be, if he had lived, this is what he would look like, and people just go crazy over it. They were forced to adapt the Eurocentric version of Christianity. Africans have their own religion and the concepts of God, which many in the African diaspora reject, as a result of anti-African conditioning by this system, by the European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege system, better known as white supremacy. One of the most egregious acts was the formation of a Caucasian man as the Son of God. Let me repeat. One of the most egregious acts was the formation of a Caucasian man as the Son of God. That's why that Caucasian could do that in Africa. That's why even today, I haven't been to a lot of African countries. This is true. But damn it, I've been to Ghana and I've seen many posters, artifacts, bumper stickers, all kind of stuff pronouncing the European Jesus. This belief implies that the Caucasian is perfect. He is good. He is supreme. And the only source of blessings. What kind of clothes do you wear? Fashion has always played an important role in the African culture. The styles and the patterns of clothing often held cultural significance. Under our captivity, Africans were not allowed to wear their traditional garments. Even today, African people have retained a fondness for elaborate fashions. But for many of us, traditional African clothing is strange and undesirable. In addition, we are loyal to clothing brands originating from outside our community. You fit any of that? You have a captive mind. The European has captured you. You are mentally enslaved. And unfortunately, that is many of our people. Brothers and sisters, I only have a few minutes. But in the 400 years that we have been here, we need to analyze it very close from our perspective, from an African perspective. It'll never change. When you look at our condition here and around the world as a result of European dominance, look at the Caribbean, look at South America, look at everywhere they are and we are, look at the situation. It doesn't bode well for us. It'll only change when Africans release that vice grip, throw off the chains or step outside of those imposed boundaries and look at the European for who and what they are. Not that you challenge them. You can't do a damn thing about them. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe they're superior and in a damn thing you can say that would challenge that. I don't give a damn how much proof you got. They rejected, they ignored, and they continue on as business as usual. And the business as usual is your suppression, your incarceration, your elimination. But we keep holding out hope. We keep hoping and praying. We keep marching, sitting in, begging and pleading, singing hymns, "We Shall Overcome." While the Caucasian has put himself into a situation from an economic standpoint, there is no way in hell there will ever be equality in this system. Ever. So as we look at this, dear brothers and sisters, we must recognize and understand the only thing for us as a people is to be independent, to be self-determining, to be liberated, to be sovereign. There is no other way. There is no other way. More discussion on this at a later date. I'm going to get out of here to make room for my good brother, Brother Franklin Jones. And you know he's going to talk about the effects on the African mind, because that's what his program's about, the Black People Matrix. I talk about everything. So, brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodio means our victorious destiny. Bibi Fahodio, brothers and sisters, have a blessed day.